It is one of the landmark events in almost every nativity story. The three wise men, or three kings, who come bearing gifts and to pay homage to the newborn Christ child. Celebrated every January 6th by the Catholic Church, the Feast of the Epiphany marks the moment when the three travelers reach their destination, the humble stable in Bethlehem, the place Mary, Joseph, and the child Jesus have made their temporary home.
Epiphany means the manifestation. So from that first birth of Christ in a stable with an ox, an ass, and a couple of shepherds, we go to the arrival of the outside world that comes to pay homage to Christ. And so in the moment of the Epiphany, we realize that Jesus has come for everybody. It's the great expression of the self-revelation of God on a universal level.
Christian art historian Elizabeth Lev says the Feast of the Epiphany has been of incredible importance to the history of art, but even more so to the very history of humanity. She explains that some of the very first images of the Epiphany are contained in the Christian catacombs here in Rome. It was in these underground chambers in the first 3 centuries after Christ's death that the first Christians, persecuted for their beliefs, practiced their faith in secret and buried their dead.
The catacombs of St. Priscilla contain 2nd century, at the latest, early 3rd century images of the three wise men, among other very, very limited number of scenes, but one of them is the three wise men. Most of the other scenes are from the Old Testament. The importance of the Epiphany is such that in some Christological cycles, the image of the Epiphany can take the place of everything. What I mean is, instead of having to show all these different images of the life of Christ, it is enough in a catacomb chapel to put the Epiphany, because all you need to know is God came into the world to show himself to you.
Who were the three kings who went to Bethlehem?
Well, the three kings undergo tremendous interpretation, reinterpretation, and reinterpretation during the course of the centuries. As a matter of fact, they are magi, which is interpreted by us today as wise men. In the Middle Ages, the idea of kingship, and so we call them the three kings. But the word magi is the word magician. These are men who are capable of great prodigies. These are men who are already very wise. They have a connection to things that are not easily accessible to people of this world. So they're seen as something that already have a contact and understanding with the invisible and, by extension, the divine. And that these three men, who are all pagan, recognize that there is this divine moment in act. The divine is coming into the world, and they travel from far, far, far away to bring homage to that divinity. Shows this recognition of the foreign, the external, of the coming of Christ.
We commonly know the three wise men as Melchior, Gaspar, and Baldassare, coming from Europe, Asia, and Africa.
The scriptures give us a very bare-bones account of these three magi, these three wise men who came from afar and who brought gifts. And from there, the three men, the gifts, the gifts are a fulfillment of scriptural writing of Isaiah, but the
gold,
frankincense, and myrrh. The wise men, their provenance, their day jobs, they have been interpreted and reinterpreted, and that is the essence of the story, because the point of the story is the universality of Christ. And so if we could fit those three men into cages and say that these are the people that Jesus came for, then it would miss the point of being that Jesus came for everyone. So you will see images of the three wise men as old, middle-aged, and young. You'll see the three wise men as black, white, and Asian. They will be everything to everybody, because the point is that Jesus came for everyone.
Oh,
The names are given to the Magi in the Middle Ages. The placement is given to the Magi almost immediately. The image of Priscilla, the image of the catacombs of Priscilla, shows the Magi, at least as we can distinguish today, we can't tell their faces apart. We can't really tell the gifts apart. The only thing we see is that one is green, one is white, and one is red. And so at this point, we see them as representing geographic space. They wear these funny hats that are indicative of foreigners. For an ancient Roman, they would recognize the hat as someone who was not Roman. It was a freedman's hat. And so here you have these three different colors, three different continents, three different parts of the known world that are not Rome, coming to pay homage to this king, to this child, to God. Later on in the Magi cycle, the Magi's will also represent, and to me this is one of the more interesting aspects, the sense of magician. They represent three different philosophical systems that the Christianity, the self-revelation of God, that puts to rest or supersedes, if you will. And so one of the wise men would be represented as the Eastern tradition of Zoroaster, and this sort of very complex, exotic religions of the East and these philosophical systems that render their homage, that Christ supersedes them. The second thinking system, of course, would be the great Greek system, descended from Plato, the Hellenistic tradition of thought. And again, they bear gifts and they render homage to the truth that is greater than theirs. And then finally, the last of the Magi would be Daniel, and would represent the Old Testament, recognizing the arrival of the fulfillment of the scriptures in Jesus.
The theme of the Epiphany has been widely depicted in art throughout the centuries, even to the present day. From the earliest simple images in the catacombs, the Magi were later portrayed in elaborate costumes, exotic, colorful robes, accompanied sometimes by entire caravans of camels and elephants and porters. And they are almost always found in the nativity scenes Christians set up to remember Christ's birth at Christmas time.
The Magi are everywhere. In the early years, you'll see them transform from a hastily painted fresco on a catacomb wall to the carved sarcophagi. If you were to ever go to some place like the Pio Christian Museum of the Vatican Museums, you would see walls, entire walls, representing the scene of the Epiphany, because it was so important to the 4th century, 5th century people who insisted on having this image on their coffins. Then one of the most colorful, one of the most fun, interesting images of the Magi is in Santa Maria Maggiore, and you have to look a little carefully. It's on the triumphal arch above the altar, and you will see on the left and on the right, you will see the Magi. But they're not wearing the simple tunics that they've worn in the 3rd and 4th century images. They wear these crazy, multicolored, exotic costumes that look like they have sequins on them, to show, again, that idea of the exotic magicians, these people from a faraway land, from different systems, these kings, this royalty, who once again bear homage to Christ. Then, walk into any art museum in the world, and you'll start to see the Magi represented by the best painters that Italy produced, that France produced. You can see the Magi by Roger van der Weyden, by Hugo van der Goes. You can see the Magi by Gentile da Fabriano, by Mantegna. There are so many images, because this is a story that never, ever tires. And as of 2006, you can go to the movie theater, so you can go to your DVD rental store, and you can see the three Magi reinterpreted one more time in the movie The Nativity, where the Magi Magi play a huge role, but they play the role of science here. They play the role of science recognizing the greatness of Jesus. The three Magi in the film are represented as a group of men who are surrounded by their instruments and their charts and their books and all the things that give proofs and indications. But when they realize that something extraordinary is happening, they have to get over their reluctance to leave the safety of their laboratory, to leave things in a theoretical, just understanding state, and to go out and to physically experience the arrival of this divine manifestation. And they have no doubt when they arrive, and the last thing they would expect, they arrive before a stable, and there, clearing away the sheep, there is a humble man and a humble woman and a child lying in a manger. And they don't hesitate, they don't look at each other with bewilderment, they bring their gifts to this child because they see the divine.
Here in Italy, the Feast of the Epiphany was once the traditional day for gift giving, and still is, but under a different name.
Smart Italian children have figured out that you can manage both Christmas and the Epiphany. So over the years, a couple changes have been made. The Epiphany is celebrated in Italy primarily by calling the figure of the Befana, which of course is just a alteration of the word Epiphany, the Befana. And the Befana is a colorful folkloric character of a woman who lived near Jerusalem, or lived near Bethlehem to be precise, and she was a very house-proud woman. She was very interested in keeping her house nice and making sure the dust came out. And on the night that the three Magi passed by her house looking for this Christ child, she was too busy sweeping and cleaning and fixing her curtains to give time to the Magi, and she sent them on their way and told them not to let their camels track dirt on her front yard. And so the Befana shortly afterwards realized her mistake. She underwent a conversion, if you will. And so she got on her broomstick and she flies around the world looking for the Christ child that she did not think about when the time was right. And she is the one who delivers gifts to children. She'll bring sweets to the sweet children, but she'll bring coal to the naughty children.
And how do the Italians celebrate this day? I mean, do kids wake up in the morning and find presents under the Christmas tree, which is still there? Or I know they have big festivals, markets.
It's a funny adaptation of other Christmas traditions. It's a stocking that comes. And so the stocking, however, is filled with candy, generally, and a few little token pieces of sugar coal. But once again, it's a question of hanging stockings or putting out stockings the way that we would for St. Nick.
Mm-hmm. And are there any particular festivals going on in Italy?
Well, the Befana is the main star of the Piazza Navona market during the course of the entire Christmas season, basically from the beginning of December till the period after the Befana. You'll see dozens, hundreds, I should say, of the little puppet figures of the Befana. They do have festivals. In Italy, any occasion is a good one to get together and eat and celebrate, so there'll be some nominal Befana festivals. But mostly it's just another day to continue celebrating Christmas.
Have the Italians then lost sight of what the feast is really about the three Magi?
I am very much afraid so. Mm. I would like very much to say, oh, no, no. No, it's still there somewhere. But I seem to remember a few years back a television interviewer going around to the children in Piazza Navona who were, you know, picking out their stockings and looking at the Befana and asking them, well, what's this holiday about? Why do you have the day off? And they don't know. And so it's a little bit, it's more than a little bit, it's very tragic to see that something that is such a part of the character of Italy has been completely, the Christian base, the real reason for it, has been completely forgotten.
Thank you.
Yet, the three Magi have an important message for those who take the time to listen.
The three Magi, I think, for us today, again, represent that universality, that every single person is called to follow Christ, and that Christ's salvific sacrifice was for every single person. And I think, like the Magi, every single one of us from every single background can make the same example of bringing a gift to Christ. The question isn't, of course, whether we're bringing gold, frankincense, or myrrh, but that we can go back to thinking about how this is an occasion for us to remember that God showed himself to us and that we should show our homage as well.
Elizabeth Lev is a professor of Christian art and architecture at Duquesne University here in Rome.